And the shir is dedicated to the Refu Shalema of Rafael Eliezer ben Rina Rizal and Yitzchak Moshe ben Shoshana. So Rabbi Finkelstein said we're holding by Erev Chanukah. And as far as Kedoshim talk about, Erev Chanukah is really the Zman HaChasima, the Yom Narad. Everything from Rosh Hashanah leading up through Yom Kippur, through Hashanah Rabbah, everything really comes to its conclusion over Chanukah. And many of the Svarim Kedoshim say, the Holy Works talk about how the Zman HaChasima is on Zos Chanukah, on the last day of Chanukah. Different opinions in the Svarim exactly, you know, where on Chanukah the cutoff is. Most people hold Zos Chanukah. So we're entering this, you know, the Ne'ilah period, so to speak, these next 8 days, where we still have an opportunity to get a Chasima Tova. But if you look on page one, the Tolos Aaron, Rav Aaron Mizhatoymer, he was a Talmud of Rav Levi Yitzchak Berdichus. And he says that really today, tonight, and tomorrow, Erev Chanukah is really the Zman HaChasima. Starting Chanukah, we're entering a whole new thing. If you want, this is really the last opportunity. The tonight's topic is not tshuva, but it's important to realize where we're holding tonight and tomorrow. An opportunity to really do tshuva and to really seal our fate in a very positive way. He writes as follows: Dine Hashefa Vavihilas Shemorid Habori Yisrael Mikhilas Maschalas Mechanukah. The new Shefa, the new downpouring of divine blessing and everything that's associated with it begins on Chanukah. Ki ad Chanukah hu Hoshana Rabbah. Hoshana Rabbah is one long. Rabbi thought Hoshana Rabbah ended. No, it doesn't end. It's one long period from Hoshana Rabbah all the way through up to Chanukah. Shehu Gemara Chasima. That's when the fate is really sealed. Hilchach Erev Chanukah hu Gemara Chasima. Erev Chanukah is really the last opportunity to seal ourselves. Everything that's going to happen this year depends on the next 24 hours, according to what he's saying. We get other Svarim push it off until the end of Chanukah. But just to you know have an appreciation of where we're holding tonight, we're at Erev Chanukah, we're seconds away, we're basically at Chanukah already. And if you want a further proof to this idea, there's a Mishnah Shkalim in the fifth parak that says, Misha Abud Mimenu Chosma Mamtinan Lo Ada Erev. If a person loses his Chosam, we wait for him Ad HaErev. Right, what does it mean? It's talking the Pashup Shah, talking about a guy who loses his chosam, his signet ring, and we want to figure out how long we wait around for him to show up. Exactly what that means, you can check it out. But on a deeper level, what does it mean? A person who lost his chosam, a person who doesn't yet have a chasima, he hasn't been sealed for life yet, he hasn't been sealed for all the good things this year. Mamtina lo ad ha'erev, we wait for him ad ha'erev. Svarim HaKadosh will say ad is gematria 74. There are exactly 74 days between what? Between Yom Kippur and Chanukah. So we wait for him Ad Erev till it's Erev, till Chanukah, the night, the holiday, the only holiday, like Rosh Hashanah Kabbalah says, that's entirely celebrated at night. We wait for him up until Chanukah. But again, it's based on that proof, the 74 days stop at Chanukah, right? Chanukah already starts something new. This next 24 hours is our opportunity to seal our fate, so to speak. And again, regardless of which way you learn, right, the bottom line is we're basically at Chanukah at this point. So much so that Halach L'maisa, let's say tomorrow, you're davening Mincha, and you accidentally say Al Anisim. So every other day of the year, what do? You have to go back to Tzei, and you have to fix it. Right? But the Ruvos Ephraim, or Ephraim Greenblatt from Memphis, in the Shavos and Shuvos, quotes from Moshe Feinstein, and says, if tomorrow by Mincha you accidentally say Al Anisim, what's the halacha? You don't have to go back. Because it's already shach to say, by Mimahim Bezman Ezeh. It's already Bezman Ezeh. We're so close to Chanukah, that even the halacha, so Erev Chanukah, are very much connected to Chanukah. You don't have to go back if you accidentally mention Chanukah. And the Meiri, one of the great Rishonim, writes in Shabbos Chafal from the days, that really the military victory took place on Chav Dalet Kislev. So it's not, you know, tonight is and tomorrow is a big, you know, we're all excited by tomorrow night, everything's really going to get started. Things are already happening in a very real way. Tomorrow, B'Poel, we'll get up and we'll light a menorah. But, you know, in Machshava, at least in our hearts and our feelings, we should already feel that we're by Chanukah. I think one of the big themes, which is what we're going to talk about tonight, one of the key themes of Chanukah is about fixing our eyes. A great tzaddikim would stare at the neiros for at malish hours on end, staring at them. As I mentioned last year, there's a sefer I have at home. It's called Meir Einei Chachamim, fitting name, Meir Einei Chachamim. I have a mayor of Kusho, and he says that everything that he wrote in that sefer came to him while watching his rebbe. Say for the author of the Sefer Or HaMeir, while he was watching his Rebbe, Rav Zev of Zhitomer, he was watching him prepare his wicks to set up his menorah. He had such, his students just watching from a distance was so, there was such a hashpa in the air that he was inspired to write an entire Sefer. I have it, it's like a 250 page Sefer. He says the whole thing came to him while he was watching his Rebbe prepare his Neiros Chanukah. So that's what Chanukah is about, fixing your eyes. And if it's true by watching someone set up their wicks,
So more so, a person takes the time, stares at the menorah, spends a little time. Again, tzaddikim would sit for hours by the menorah, just staring at the menorah, not saying anything. It's nice to learn by the menorah, it's nice to daven by the menorah. You can just sit there and stare at the candles, right, or stare at the shaman, and it fixes your eyes. And halacha l'maisa, the shalos and shuvos shev yaku, and orachaim simon chav beis paskins, that it's a mitzvah, it's a real mitzvah to look at the neiros, not just a chassidish, zach, to stare at the neiros. It's a halacha. It's brought down the halacha l'maisa that a person should spend that whatever amount. You have to sit there for 10 hours if it's ridiculous for you. But the Yisod B'Shor HaShavodah says at least a half hour, 30 minutes. Okay, if it's too much, it's for 5 minutes. But do something. Sit there by the Neros and try to absorb it. There's a tremendous hashva that comes down. This new hashva, like the Tolos Aaron was talking about. This whole new world is being created on Hanukkah. And it's Tziv writes in Parshas Naso that whenever Moshe would have a hard time, I'd imagine Moshe sitting there in the Mishkan and he's spending his time learning. What would happen when Moshe would get stuck on something? What would he do? So then the Tziv writes in Parshas Naso, he'd go and stare at the menorah. And then you get inspired, you figure out all those problems. So the menorah is the key to fixing your eyes, to starting to see things properly, and there's tremendous opportunities of what to gain. But even more than the positive of what to gain, the Svarim talk about, the Rechayim, the Zohar Kodesh, all talk about, you stare at the menorah, and it fixes your eyes from any negative things that you saw. Whether it means seeing something inappropriate, whether it means looking at a Jew in the wrong way, or looking at a situation in the wrong way. And that's really what I want to focus on. The importance of fixing your eyes, not just physically fixing our eyes, but fixing our perspective on life, how we look at things, right? How we assess a situation, and try to really develop the Torah eyes to see it in the right way. So we'll start with the Gemara, the famous Gemara in Pesachim Daf Nun Amud Aleph, where Rav Yosef, the son of Rav Yishuv ben Levi, right? He dies. He goes up to Shemayim. It's not in the source sheets. I'll let you know. And he goes up to Shemayim, and he comes back. He's revived. The Gemara says, and they ask him, "What did you see?" He says, "I saw an upside down world," right? And the truth is, he probably saw a right side up world. We're the upside down world, right? To his perspective, to what he's used to seeing, it looked upside down. But to recognize that, this is the reality. Our world is very much an upside down world. There's a wonderful story I once saw that the great Maggid, Rav Yaakov Galinsky, he and his wife, unless I told this story in school, I think, he and his wife had a neighbor. She was illiterate. And she used to come by, Rav Yaakov Galinsky and his wife used to come by and visit every day. And have the Rebbetzin read the newspaper to her. So she walked in one day, and she saw the newspaper lying in the kitchen, and Rebbetzin Galinsky was busy about the sink peeling some potatoes, so she walked over, she picked up the newspaper, and she started screaming. She said, "How could you peel potatoes at a time like this? You're so insensitive. Look what's going on here." Right? So she said, "Well, what's wrong? The woman holds up the newspaper, she says, "Look, this boat was overturned. Terrible destruction. That wasn't the Titanic, and everyone's thinking. Right? Another boat, a famous boat, was crashed. It was a terrible disaster. Look at this boat." Right? So the Rebbetzin takes the paper out of her hands. And she says, "You're holding it upside down." And she flips it around, and she starts reading the article, and it says, "This boat, this wonderful new ship set sail for the first time." So this woman, she looks at it, she sees an upside down boat, she thinks it's a disaster. It's the end of the world, people were probably killed. Right? You flip it around, you have the right perspective, you see, in reality, what was it? It was a tremendous simcha for this, this boat. It was setting sail for the first time. It was a whole new opportunity. That's life in this world. We see things upside down. We look at it as a tragedy and a terrible disaster. And in reality, if you have the right perspective, there's a great line. One of my favorite lines, really, it's a very harsh tshuva, famous tshuva from the Noda Behuda. I don't know if people have the practice of saying L'shem Yichud before they, my father's going to like this story. Right on time. So the Noda Behuda has a famous tshuva where he speaks very critically again, right? You guys know what L'shem Yichud is? Before a certain mitzvah, so Chassidim, based on Kabbalistic Kavanas, used to say a little paragraph called L'shem Yichud, where it talks about how this mitzvah is going to bring together God and Bnei Yisrael in different ways and do certain things in the Shemayim. So the Noda Behuda has a tshuva where he's very strongly against it. He says, what even the bracha is? You need to have a special tefillah to prep the bracha. You say the bracha, and that does what it needs to do in Shemayim. You need to make up some special little tefillah that I'm going to say, special kavanas. Just say what's supposed to, say what you say. And he says, he very strongly writes in Yerodeas, Simon Tzadi Gimel, Charles Tshuva's Noda Behuda. Very sharp words. He says, with regard to this, Hador HaYasom HaZeh, this orphaned nation, right? People who don't know anything about Torah, they make up these new crazy things. Ani Omer, he quotes the pasuk in Hosea, Yisharim Darchei Hashem, V'tzadikim Yelchu Behem. Right, so the pasuk says in Hosea, Hashem's ways are just, right? V'tzadikim Yelchu Behem, and a tzaddik walks in those ways. And the end of the pasuk is, U'poshim Yikashluva, and sinners stumble in it. So the Noda Behuda changed it to a chassidim, Yikash Luvan, right? The Hasidim, they ruin everything. They mess everything up. So many years later, the grandchildren of the Noz Yehuda wanted to, they were reprinting the Shas and Chuvos, and they were a little more understanding of the Hasidic movement. So they went to the Semach Sadek, the Lubavitcher Rebbe, and they asked him, you know, it's a harsh lie, people are not going to be so happy about it. When I was looking for it in my Chuva, I knew where the Chuva was, I couldn't find it, I thought they edited it out. Sometimes, you know, it's a well-known lie. So they asked the Semach Sadek, should we flip the line back? So he says, no, why would you flip it back? He says, your great-grandfather, he turned Poshim into Hasidim. And you want to turn Hasidim back into Poshim? Right? So it all depends on your perspective. How do you look at it? Do you look at it as who the screaming? But you know, he found a way to have the right perspective. It's a great little maisa. But again, that's the goal of Chanukah, to shape our perspective, to start fixing our eyes to see in the right way. Let's take a look on page 2. Hey, Rav Tzadok HaKohen of Lublin, we'll see a few times tonight. Rav Tzadok talks about this idea that in the Torah world, with Torah perspective, things are not always as we would expect. Rav Tzadok writes the following in the Sefer Sisei Lail on page 2. Hashem Yisbarach Nikra La'olam Gomel Chasadim Tov. Hashem is always interested in doing good. Kizek Kol Pulo, so that's all Hashem knows how to do. He's the source of good. He's the root of all good. That's all He knows how to do. V'chol Atzilos Midosav Haisarach Letzorach Lahatil Yisrael. Everything He does to dilute Himself, Kiviyachol, to make Himself accessible to us, is just to do good things for us. Kol Sha'amri, Kol Samedrish, Aznaim Shalamala, Ein Kurios, El Lishmoa Tfilasi. Right? That my ears are only, the ears and Shemaim, whatever that means, are only etched out, they're only dug out. The openings of the ears and Shemaim are only to hear our Tfilos. Shemar Aznaim Kurisali. V'kiyotze B'zeh B'chol Kochol Shalamala, Hu Rakut Tzarchinu Lahatibon. Everything's about us. It's all to do good for us. Now, what happens sometimes, we see things in the wrong way. V'kashar Nira Pa'amim La'ayin Lochein. You look sometimes at a situation and you say, no, this how is this good? Hashem, what's going on here? Right, Hashem's having an off day, he's having a bad game. Right? What's going on here? Ze'adir abalahati betova yosekadola says Rav Tzadok HaKohen of Lublin, you know why it looks bad? Because it's even better. It's so good that it has to be disguised as bad. Why? Where does that come from? What's the thinking behind that? He says, it's so great. Ze'adir abalahati betova yosekadola shalomal minaseichal anoshi. It's such a good thing that Hashem has to make it in a way that you can't understand it. So it looks so bad, but in reality, it's so good, right? It's a very different way than we often look at difficult situations. Like it says in the Medrash, Tov Ma'od Ze Yitzhar Hara V'Mavis V'Sheina. Right? The Medrash says, "What's Tov? Tov is the Yitzhar Tov. Tov Ma'od. Tov Ma'od. The Yitzhar Hara is Tov Ma'od. Death is Tov Ma'od. Sleep is Tov Ma'od. This is how we define Tov Ma'od. These are good things." The whole elu niram lo tov rain, they appear really bad. Valzalmar de hutomor. Adrab, right? The Zayish Omek Tov. It's so deeply good that we can't even grasp it. It has to be so hidden, so concealed. And then he gives a beautiful mashal just to explain this idea. Alderach mashal. Ha'ochol maichol matuk lecheich. If a person eats a sweet food, hu bishvil hanaso berega. So most of the time, why are you eating this? You know, you're eating candy. You're not eating candy because it's healthy for you, it's going to better your growth. You're eating it because you have a momentary pleasure. What happens if you're swallowing a bitter medicine? Why are you doing that? It tastes terrible. You must be doing it because what? It must be to heal your body. If it wasn't for a greater purpose, why would you do it? So it's the same thing. Hashem sometimes has to give us a bitter medicine, but it's for a greater good. And that has to be our approach. And Rav Tzadok in many of the Svarim talks about this idea. If you go to page 3, Rav Tzadok gives us a few practical examples. Right? We look at it one way, and the Torah perspective says, no, you're looking at it completely backwards. Right? What would be a good example? Take a look on page 3. Also in the Sefer Sisei Laila, Usubam. I'll start from the arrow. V'chol davar habirahu b'hafcho. The way to clarify everything is to flip it around. Right? It's an olam hafcho. We're an upside down world. The mitzvahs do the opposite of what you would expect. What would be an example? Give away your money so that you'll get rich. Right? Now, if you ask anyone in the secular world, right, investment strategies, should I give away all my money to get rich? You'd probably say no. If you're smart, you'll probably hoard your money and save your money, right, and put it in banks where you have guaranteed interest. Right? And yet the Torah says, no, give away your money, give miser, and you'll get rich. And Hashem says, test me. It's one of the few places where Hashem says, you know, See if I'm all talk. Chanuni no bezos. Try it. See what happens. Give your money to get rich. Dilufiteva meiser humani. Right. Normally, giving away money makes you poor. Mani adam. Shenose meches Shnei Maisos for Truma. You're giving away, by the end of the day, you've given close to 20% of your stuff away. But by mitzvah, hefech zemasher. But by mitzvah, it's the opposite. You get rich. V'chein yisa b'Shabbos, the Gemara Shabbos says, Ashirim shebechutz la'aretz b'shvil Shabbos. Why are people rich? Because they keep Shabbos. U'b'medrash eicha, the Medrash says, Ha'aku meganim. Yehudim sheheim aniyim b'shvil Shabbos. Sheheim b'teilim shviyas yimeyim. The guy make fun of us, and they say, you guys are fools, right? They're megan us, they make fun of us. They say, you're going to be poor, you take off once every 7 days. Or like the Gemara Megillah, right? Every day is a Yom Tov by Jews, right? Shehi pehi, Shabbos hayom, Pesach hayom, every, you know. And then you start making up all these other minor holidays. I got to think of the Lag BaOmer, Chol Hamoed. I never heard of Chol Hamoed. I've had Jews work for me before. I never heard of Chol Hamoed. They're making up these new holidays. And he gives many other examples. He says, a person's Ma'aneg on Shabbos. If you delight on Shabbos, you're saved from Gehenna. Right? A person who normally enjoys physical delights goes to Gehenna. And now you tell me delight and I'm going to go to Shemayim. I'm going to get a good portion of Lamava. Or destroy an ear on Idachas. You'll become more merciful. Destroy, wipe out an entire city. Kill the babies. You'll become a merciful person. Right? So the Torah doesn't always work the way we would think it would. And the reason, I think, if it humbly suggests, the reason Hashem set it up this way is because He wants us to be reminded constantly to see that the Torah system is a different system than the way we think. A constant reminder that, you know, maybe your perspective is a little bit off. Maybe your way of looking at things is not the way that we're supposed to see things. There's a mice, there was a 15-year-old kid. It's brought down. I don't know if it's more a legend than a true mice, but we'll assume it's true. That there was a 15-year-old kid who was terminally ill and was treated by the Rambam. And as the Rambam saw he was getting to his end, the Rambam asked him, he says, you know, when you go to the Olam HaEmes, at this point it was clear that this kid was on his way out. The Rambam said, I need you to ask 3 questions in Shemayim for me and come back to me in a dream and tell me what they say. The first 2 were halakha questions. The third question was, why do young people die? Okay. Fine. So he goes to Shemayim, he asks the first 2 questions. He comes back in a dream to the Rambam and he tells him, the answer to the first question. I says, "New, what's with the third question?" He says, "To be honest, I intended to ask your question, but as I got higher and higher in Shemayim, closer and closer to the Kisei Hakavod, I saw that the third question wasn't even a question anymore. I couldn't ask, why do young people die? Why do tragedies happen in Shemayim? It's not a tragedy. The whole perspective is different. Now, just to give a disclaimer, that doesn't mean we have to approach it that way. That's not a healthy way. For we're still humans, and Hashem wants us to function like humans. The Maisa that Rav Shlomo Carbach brings down, where Rav Malchel Lezhens. One time there was a terrible tsar and he was davening for like 3 days and fasting and all sorts of things. And at the end of 3 days, he passed out and his Rebbe, the Magid of Mezrich, came to him in a dream. And he said, Rebbe, you know, how come we're not doing anything in Shemayim? There's terrible gezeira down on earth for us. Why aren't you doing anything in Shemayim? Beg Hashem, do something for us. So the Magid says, I wish I could help you, but in Shemayim, I don't see a terrible decree. In Shemayim, we don't see it that way. So Rabbi Malchel Lezhens says, so maybe I should stop davening, maybe I should stop fasting. He says, no, chas v'shalom. Yeah, you have to approach it. If you see a tzara, if you have a friend, God forbid, who's sick, right? So then you daven for that person. You do whatever you can to help that person. You don't just sit back passively. But the goal is that we should at least be aware a little bit to recognize that there is a higher system. There's something going on beyond what appears to our human eyes. Right? And in Shemayim, it's not necessarily the same tragedy that we see on earth. That's not the way they see it in Shemayim. There was someone by the name of Rav Moshe Soloveitchik, not the father of an earlier Rav Moshe Soloveitchik. He was a very wealthy, before he was a rav, he was a very wealthy timber merchant. And he one season he lost his entire business. What did he do? Okay, nothing better than do. I'll sit and learn. He started to sit and learn. He became a posik, a famous posik in Kovno. And his great-grandchild became the Beis Halevi. And the whole Brisker dynasty came from him. So Rav Chaim Volozhiner, in the biography of Rav Chaim Volozhiner, Rav Chaim Volozhiner used to talk about it. He said, you know, he thought it was such a tragedy. He thought this was the end of the family business or we're wiped out. Okay, what am I going to do? I'll sit and learn a little. He started the Brisker dynasty, right? These are the people who are respected by the entire Torah world as people who, you know, created new realms of learning. It's important that we develop that right perspective. In this week's Parsha, we have the sale of Yosef Atzadik. And on page 4, and Rashi tells us at the beginning of the parsha, Eila told us Yaakov Yosef. And Rashi says Yosef is the Siba Rishona. If you want to understand where all of Jewish history starts, so look at Yosef. That's where it all begins. Yosef going to Mitzrayim, then everyone coming to Mitzrayim, the Jews coming out of Mitzrayim, getting the Torah. It all begins with Yosef, right? And if you learn the story, right, at least on what you would expect to come out of this story, it doesn't look very pretty. And I put it in, you know, it's, I'll just read a couple lines from it in English. You can look at it if you'd like on your own. But Rabbi Akiva Tatz, in his Living Inspired, describes it so beautifully, very poetically. He describes the whole history of, and he says at the beginning, he says, this is not just the history of Yosef. This is every person's personal galus and geula is built into this. All of Klal Yisrael's history is built into this story. All right, let's start where it's underlined on the left-hand side. The brothers made a mistake. They sold Yosef. The root of trials, often hidden, begins with human error. And the brothers messed up. Okay. But what happened? The mistake was pretty severe. And Yaakov is mourning, and things are really bad. And it gets to a point where they see that Yaakov is not getting over it, and they feel terribly guilty about what they did. And if you go to the top of the right column where it's underlined, it must have seemed to them that they had been the cause of permanently obstructing the destiny of the Jewish people, and hence of the entire universe. They thought everything was falling apart. What happens? They come down to Mitzrayim, and then Yosef starts messing with them. Right? The situation's getting worse. And Yosef takes hostages. And Yosef plays all sorts of evil tricks on them. And they think, this guy is the man, right? If there's anyone who's making our situation worse, it's this guy. And little do they know, it's Yosef in disguise. And he writes, Yosef is torturing them in order to bring about the redemption. Right? See what's underlined. Right? Meaning what? Yosef has to put them through a test. What's the test? Are you going to treat Binyamin the way you treated me? Or are you going to stand? That's the only way they can rectify their sin, if they're put in the same situation, and this time they pass the test. Okay, turn to page 5. So he describes how the message is that suffering is supposed to have a purpose, right? That everything along the way is for a purpose, but they don't see it that way. And then things are starting to look a little bit better, right? Binyamin comes down, Yosef's treating them decently, they're heading home, and all of a sudden, they think everything's over, and they open their bags, and the next thing they know, they're being chased after, and he describes, again, underlined on the left-hand side, very often, final crisis is preceded by an illusion of salvation. They think it's all over, and then suddenly what happens? Euphoria develops, everything's great, the relief is tangible, and then all of a sudden, it gets even worse. Right? You think the guy's finally heading to a speedy recovery, and everything starts to fall apart, completely fall apart. And he says in the footnote, we see this with Moshe Rabbeinu also. Right, Moshe Rabbeinu is saved by Bas Paro. He's being raised in Paro. He's going to be our salvation. Finally, he goes to Paro and tries to plead on behalf of the Jews. And what happens? Paro says, double work. Make it worse. So before there could be that Gula, there always has to be what? There has to be that confusion. Right? There has to be something that challenges our perspective. And it's getting worse and worse, to the point where he writes on the right-hand side, right, that Yehuda steps up. There's going to be an epic battle. Either option is going to be total destruction. And then suddenly what happens? Yehuda defends Binyamin, and all of a sudden Yosef says, Ani Yosef, right? And in that sudden moment, everything makes sense. At that moment, all of a sudden they realize, the guy who was torturing us this entire time, he is the one who, he's the salvation. He's the one who allows us to rectify our sin and to save ourselves. And again, this has to be our perspective to all of Galus and Geula. Chanukah is about fixing this perspective, to recognize that when it looks like complete Galus, that is the key to Geula. It's only out of that darkness, the famous line in the Zohar, Parshas Tetzav, which is really the title of tonight's shiur, was called "Out of Darkness Comes Light." It's a line from the Zohar. The Zohar says in Parshas Tetzav, "Less Nahora, there could be no light except that which emanates from Chashucha, except for that which comes out of dark." Similar Gemara, Chazal have it also. In more mainstream Chazal, the Gemara in Shabbos on Daf Ayin Zayin on the base, the Gemara tells a story that one time Rabbi Zera met up with Rabbi Yehuda, and he saw that he was in a very good mood. V'ibay minei kol chalole alma havi amarle. If you would ask him anything in the world, he would tell. He saw, you know, his rabbi was ready to give away some deep Torah secrets. So what did he ask him? It's a very deep Gemara, a lot of weird things that he asked him. But one of the questions he asked him, he said, why is it that when a person's walking, you know, with his animals, the goats walk before the sheep? So he says, Kibriyasa Shalom, it's just like the way of the world. That the goats, right, goats are black, sheep are white, right? Just like the nature of the world is darkness and then light. So too, the goats walk before the sheep. He saw it as a hint to all of creation. But that's how the world works. The world works with darkness before light. And only a person who's willing to understand that is going to have that peace of mind to get through it. Otherwise, we're going to be bugging out our whole life. We're going to be saying, you know, Hashem, what's with all this darkness? What's with all this destruction? Why are there so many nisyonos? Why is there so much suffering? Right, God, if you're all good, so what is all this? So the goal is to prepare ourselves, to recognize that is the reality. There can be no light except for that which comes out of darkness. And I'll just add one more quote from Rav Tzadok tonight. On page 6, Rav Tzadok in his Rishis Leila, again, this time Ospach Dalit, says it very, very clearly. There's no discussion here. He says, "Haseder sheyasad Hashem yisbarach po bria v'reisha chashucha v'hadu nahora." And that's our Gemara in Shabbos. He's in the line from the Zohar, citing Shabbos. "Tachu b'chol yimos olam." Everything in life, throughout entire history, this is how it works. "Ein lacha shum or." There could be no light that mizgala el mitoch hachoshech hakodem lo. That's the way it has to be. And he says, Derech Mashal. He says, right, you have Mitzrayim, suffering Mitzrayim, that gets you to Matan Torah. You have an Aron being captured, that gets you to the base of Mikdash. You have an eagle, that gets you to the Mishkan. everything that looks like a disaster in Jewish history immediately is followed by a tremendous revelation of light. And he writes, we jump to the arrow on the left-hand side. He says, "V'chein kol davar mitoch choshech yotzei or shu mamish hefach oso choshech." The darker it is, the better. All right, the complete reversal of what you would expect to happen. You look at the eagle, you think this is a disaster. Who's one of the worst kings? Spoke about in one of the other Chanukashirs. Who's one of the worst kings in Jewish history? Right, Achaz. Achaz was terrible. He tried to shut down. He literally wanted to shut down Torah completely. And who's his son? Says his son, look in Sifkas Asadik, Osmem Tes. His son is Chizkiah, the guy who forced Torah onto the Jewish people to the point that every little kid knew called Torah Kula in many, you know, in many Ofanim, in many different ways. So again, it's hard to accept this, but this is the system that HaKadosh Baruch Hu created, to recognize that there has to be a darkness that precedes a light. And if it's hard to wait it out for Mashiach, so Hashem gives us a little, a miniature, you know, crash course in this every single week. Turn to page 8. The Beis Yitzchak, famous Rav from Lemberg, from Lvov, the Beis Yitzchak Yehuda Shmelkish, and author of Shastu is Beis Yitzchak, also in Sefer HaKadosh. So he says, what's the difference between us and the Goyim? Just look at the way we set up our week. How do we function and how do they function? Right? Take a look right below the arrow at the Aleph. Umos ha'olam shomrim yom rishon b'shua. The Umos ha'olam, when do they rest? They start the week with rest. Right? Sunday. I gotta rest up for the busy week ahead. They start with the light, they start with the relaxation, the menucha, and then they go into the darkness, into the difficulties of the week. V'hu lahem yom menucha. V'yisrael shomrim yom achron b'shua. V'hu yom shabbos. What do? We say we're going to take 6 days of darkness, an entire work week, a difficult, right? Not like in America, where right in Israel everyone works on Sunday, right? 6 days of real work, and then we come to our Shabbos, our Yom Menucha. V'siva sadar. What's the reason? Ki Esav who arishon shiasad moni. Esav is what? He's completed. He's created in a completed state, right? V'hu tzir hagufni. The guf is created in a completed state. Asher kol tchunaso lasviya v'yaso b'tanugim. Everything he's interested in is about supplying the guf. V'acharei kein, right? So you have an Esav preceding a Yaakov. You have a darkness before light. You have a person who's all about the guf preceding someone who's all about spirituality. V'acharei kein yotza achiv, hu Yaakov, asher ruach bawa neshama maschelz. Yaakov represents the neshama. And he says it's very clear. The guf is created, right, in a more complete state. And as life goes on, okay, it goes slowly, it rises up. But by the time you hit your teens, your late teens, your 20s, right, after that, it's all downhill. The body starts to slowly shut down more and more. What about the neshama? It's the exact opposite. The neshama, hopefully, a person developed it. It's born, it's put in this world. You have a yitzhar har before you have a yitzhar tov. It's very confused, and you spend the entire life developing it, getting it to the point where it shines, where it becomes light. And this is a weekly. I think you can look at this as a weekly chizuk for us, right? That we're reminded every week. You're going to work hard during the 6 days of darkness. You're going to have a regular work week, a lot of mundane things on our plate. But then you come to a Shabbos, and you're able to taste some of that real light, to taste what it feels like when you complete the challenge. And when a person is makabel in this way, when a person is willing to bear the darkness and get to the light, so it makes it so much sweeter. Right? The guy, they eat their dessert first. They have Sunday, and then they'll eat their vegetables. Right? But the smarter person, the chacham was, eyes in his head, like the pasuk says, so he's willing to work a little bit, and he puts off the pleasure until he can really enjoy it. And that's what the stipler writes on page 10. The Stipler says that Avram is told Lech Lecha Me'artzecha, the somewhat well-known piece. Tom used to talk about this piece. The Stipler goes and writes, Avram is told Lech Lecha Me'artzecha, go to the land that I'm going to show you. Right? End of the first line. Amru Chazal, the Medrash Rabba, Rashi quotes it. V'lama lo gila lo miyad le'iz aretz yelech. Why didn't Hashem tell him where he's going? Why this whole secret plan? Avram, just go. Where am I going? Just go. You'll figure it out. Right? Why not tell him right off the bat? To make it more special to him, and to give him reward for every step. So he says, what do you mean to make it more special to him? It's more special if you don't know where you're going? So he says, yeah. To make it more special, what do we learn? We learn a major yesod in life. What makes something more special when you wait for it? A person who's rich and goes to, fancy meals, fancy restaurants every night. He gets tired. How many nights in a row can he eat a $100 steak? But a person who once a year on his birthday goes for a fancy meal, right? It's much more memorable. It takes on a whole new meaning. Right? Lahavda, I'm using a physical muscle. Right? But the goal is that if a person longs on, you look forward to something, you wait for it, which is what Mashiach is all about, the longing for it, Hashem keeps pushing it off because Hashem says, bear a little more darkness, a little more darkness. And now when the light finally comes, it's really going to be an unbelievable thing. Okay, just to connect to Hanukkah and to wrap up, right, if you think about it, Hanukkah is all about getting to this light. Hanukkah is the one holiday that gets better every year, because as the galus drags on, it gets darker, the galus gets darker, and then the light of Hanukkah is able to have more of a roshim. So imagine a person wanted to paint with very bright colors, right? And you want that light, you want the colors to really, you know, make an impact. And the person sees it, wow, just blown away by the brilliance of his painting. So what are you going to do? What would you do? So you first turn to page 12. So you turn to page 12. Take it from the Sefer Beit Ginazai from Thomas and Av. So he's describing the darkness that we experience every year during the 3 weeks. He says, why do you need this darkness? And I think it's the same thing by Hanukkah. Why do we need such a darkness to allow for Hanukkah to shine? So he gives a beautiful mashal from the Kavrina Rebbe. Right? He says, where it's bracketed off. Uvor Yesharim, the Sefer Yesharim, it brings from Harav HaKadosh from Kavrin, or Moshe of Kavrin, Slam Ruch Hasidim come from Kavrin. Sheyam Eilu Hu Kmi Sherotza Litzayir Mata Yafa. It's like these days, these very dark days of the 3 weeks, it's like a person who wants to paint this this very beautiful map. Right? He wants to paint something. He thinks this very, very detailed, very nice, right? Vinaya, very beautiful, Mikama Gvanin, from different colors, right? Osin Mitchil Yesod Shachar. So what does he do? He paints the canvas very dark black, right? Solid black. Why? That way every drop of color he puts on his canvas is going to shine so much more. So that's what Hanukkah is. He says, that's what the 3 weeks are. He says, the Kadosh Baruch Hu gives us these 3 weeks of complete darkness. The terrible, most terrible time of the year, in order to what? In order that when you come out of the 3 weeks, you come to an Elul, and Rosh Hashanah, and Yom Kippur, and a Sukkot, right? And a Simchas Torah. So all of a sudden, those things shine so much more. But it's the same thing. That's what Hanukkah is. Hanukkah is the thing. It's because it's so dark that we, right? Hanukkah wouldn't be as great if you had the light, you know, like the Gemara says, a chulin, a candle by day doesn't do anything. Right? Hashem Dafka gave us a holiday that carries us to Mashiach to fix our eyes. The root of all sin is the eyes. Chava saw the Teir HaIsha. That's the root of all sin. It's the first place in the Torah where someone rejected Hashem. Chava looked at the tree and said, I'm going to eat that tree. And Mashiach is a Chanukah, which is a chinuch for Mashiach, is the thing that carries us to fix that same mistake that the Nachash brought to the world, that Chava brought to the world. Choshech is Yavan. Right? We know the Medrash. Yavan is compared to darkness. Right? The darkest enemy that we ever experience, which allows, again, out of darkness comes light. That allows for us to create new realities of light. And just to conclude with one or two final sources, if you turn to page 14, the Pachad Yitzchak, we're putting there, this time in English, I don't have the Hebrew one on Hanukkah, but he describes this in a very beautiful way. Did I skip a page? I'm sorry, 13. Let's go back to 13 for 1 second. The Pachad says, where is the first machlokas in Jewish history? Machlokas is a terrible thing. There was once a time when there was complete clarity in Torah. Everyone did the same thing. Everyone knew exactly what to do. Where do we start to see machlokas? So he writes on page 13, on the right hand side, second to last paragraph. We have a tradition from our greatest scholars that Yossi ben Yoaz and Yossi ben Yochanan, right, described in Pirkei Avos, who lived during the era of the conflict with Greece, were the very first sages who disagreed concerning a point of Torah law. The first machlokas in Jewish history took place during when? During Galus Yavan. So you think, okay, this is right. The Yavanim, Ashkichon Torah Secha, they're trying to destroy the world. They're trying to destroy Torah. They're blocking out Torah. They're making it so dark. The first machlokas, confusion. But what was the reality? Sometimes, he quotes the Gemara in Nachos, sometimes the bitula is kiyumo. Sometimes when you try to do a vatal sign, that dafka makes it grow stronger. Because think about it. What did they create? What did the Yavanim create? They created Melchamta Shel Torah. They created the fact that rabbis are going to fight in Torah, and there's going to be a discussion in the Beis Medrash, and we're going to have a Shas, and we're going to have a Rishonim and Achronim who elaborate on that, and the Machlokas keeps growing, but the Torah keeps growing with it. Turn to page 14, he describes it so beautifully. Right? He says it's the same thing when Moshe breaks the Luchos. Moshe comes down and destroys the Luchos. Right? And what does Hashem say then? Yashakal Shoshibar, the Shkoyach for breaking the Luchos. Shkoyach for breaking the Luchos? Had Moshe not broken the Luchos, he never would forget Torah. So what do you get in the Shkoyach for causing us to forget Torah? What's the advantage of forgetting Torah? So Rav Huttner writes that in reality, yeah, look at the arrow. Right? A fascinating and novel concept emerges that Torah forgetfulness can cause the enhancement of Torah. Moshe made the Torah a better thing. And if you go again to the right-hand side, where it's underlined, what's the end of the process? The end of the process is that all legitimate Torah disagreements enlarge and expand the Torah. The more we fight about Torah, The more there's different shittos, so the more Torah continues to grow, and more svarim will be printed on those topics, and it continues and continues to grow. And all of this Torah scholarship was created as a result of forgetfulness. The more Yavan tries to block, the darker they are. The choshech of Yavan, the darker they are, the more they try to block out Hashem's presence in this world. That's stuff where Hashem is to be found. I'll conclude with the final, there's a maimer I put in on page 15 through 17. You can read it at your leisure if you'd like. A beautiful piece by Rav Shimshon Pinkus in a Sefer on Hanukkah. Exactly on this topic. Or may Ophel, right? Light out of darkness. We'll just read one paragraph. We'll read on page 15 the paragraph that begins where he has a bold in Hashem Amar Lishkun Baracha. And he explains, basically, he wraps up everything we've been saying tonight. That sometimes we think, you know, if I want to find Hashem, where do I look? I try to find the lightest places I can look. Right? It's not always true. Sometimes more Hashem is to be found in the darkness than in the light. Hadvarim ramuzim b'psukim. It's all hinted to in the psukim, he says. Kasher Shlomo HaMelech bana his Beis HaMikdash. Shlomo builds the Beis HaMikdash. Chasuv Azam or Shlomo Hashem Amar Lishchon Barachal. Hashem desires to dwell in the dark. Kiviyachol b'machum shachushach barachal. The darker it is, that's where you're going to find more Shechina. Shama Shechina Shochenes. And he quotes a pasuk. He says, when we got the Torah, what happens? When Moshe nigash el ha'rafel. When Moshe went up to get the Torah, he went up in a cloud of darkness, a thick darkness. Why? Every time Hashem reveals Himself, it's in a cloud, it's in darkness. To remind us, again, to shape our perspective that what? That it's dafka in the dark that we come to find the Kodesh Baruch Hu. And he goes on to explain, you can take a look on page 17 if you want, he explains that that's why when they lit the Pach Hashem, they knew it was going to last. You know why? Because they said, it's so dark, there has to be a tremendous light that's going to come out of this. It's almost like they lit it with the confidence to know that Hashem has to be, right? This is the reality of the world. We know B'riyasa Shalom. We know that darkness precedes light. And if it's so dark, if the Yavanim have created so much darkness, it's going to lead to tremendous light. And that's what gave them the confidence to go on and to try to light the oil. And in the reality, of course, it worked. So B'riyasa Hashem, we should try hard to be the types of Jews who have the right perspective. Right? Hanukkah, spend time looking at the Neiros, but not just, you know, fixing our physical eyes from all the negative things we may have seen, but to really fix our perspective, and to recognize that things can change very quickly. We sometimes, you know, we don't have enough confidence in Hashem's ability. So dark, how is it, you know? Think about it. HaKadosh Baruch Hu created, Chafetz Chaim writes, Hashem created technological things to help us understand how Shemayim works. Right? You walk into a dark room, you flip on the light. It doesn't take time for the darkness to leave. Instantly, it disappears. Rav Palm used to say that the people who saw the fall of communism was a real preparation for Mashiach. Because no one thought in a million years communism would just, you know, disappear like that. Overnight it's going to just disappear. Right? Big companies that disappear overnight. All these things are reminders to us. How long does it take Mashiach to come? From the time Mashiach comes to the building of the Beis HaMikdash is no more, says the Lubavitch Rebbe, no more than 23 minutes and 59 seconds. How do you know? Because some say that a Kohen is not allowed to drink Bezman, is not allowed to drink wine. Because what's going to happen? If he drinks wine, then he's not going to be able to work in the Beis HaMikdash. Right? How long does it take for the wine to wear off? The amount of time it takes to walk a mil. The maximum amount of time a mil is 24 minutes. So that means the assumption is that what? According to that opinion, that from the time Mashiach comes until the Beis HaMikdash is built and the Kohanim are ready to serve is 23 minutes and 59 seconds. That's it. So Mirtz Hashem, we should be zocha that this, you know, chinuch, Chanukah, the chinuch for the Beis HaMikdash, it should happen very speedily. We should be zocha that we're there to greet Mashiach with our eyes that have been purified and have the right Torah outlook. Freilich im Chanukah. Lichtig im Chanukah.